are listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. Welcome to number 4 in a series called The COVID Leadership Challenge. I'm John Scott, and this is an INCJ podcast and YouTube. COVID-19 is presenting a unique challenge to frontline services, not just in health and social sectors, but in criminal justice too. At INCJ, we wanted to find out how leaders internationally were handling the issues around COVID-19. So we've started a conversation with criminal justice leaders to ask about their experience of the crisis. Our hope is that sharing answers will help find solutions and fresh ideas. If you want to follow the series, you will find it on our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or on Twitter at INTCGnetwork. Now, let me introduce Michael Nail, who is the Commissioner of the Georgia Department of Community Supervision and is the current president of the National Association of Probation Executives in America. I think they call it NAEP. Now, let me welcome Michael. Tell us where you're based.
Thank you very much, John, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm based out of Atlanta, Georgia.
And are you working from home at the minute?
Right now, I am in the office, which has been a rarity since March.
Now, tell us a bit about Georgia. What's the population of the state?
Population is about 13 million.
Okay, and your current job exactly?
Currently, I'm Commissioner of the Department of Community Supervision. We are responsible for community supervision of all adult felons, either in a probation or a parole status.
Now, are all states in America structured this way, or are you a bit different to other states?
We're a bit different. We're one of few where our agency focuses specifically on community supervision. More times than not, you're going to find the supervision arm associated with the Department of Corrections or parole, one of the other. So that's what makes Georgia a little bit unique in this. And we're new since 2015 is when our agency was created.
So you look after people on license when they come out of prison, as well as people have community orders?
That's correct.
Okay. And was this because your governor wanted to bring the two services together?
It was. We found that there was a lot of duplication of services and efforts. Sometimes people would be supervised in a parole status and a probation status at the same time. So it was really about efficiencies and effectiveness and streamlined approach. But what we also realized is now Department of Corrections can focus on managing safe and secure facilities, and the parole board can focus on release decision making, and we focus exclusively on supervision of those individuals.
Okay. Now, you've got a leadership role both locally in running those community supervision orders, but also you have a national job. So you've got leadership with both a national and local perspective. It might be just interesting for our listeners to know how many staff you're responsible for at the moment.
Sure. Directly in my current role as commissioner, it's about just over 2,000 staff, and 1,500 of those are what we call in a law enforcement status.
Okay. So that's your day job is a big job. Tell us a bit about how NAEP operates. What does that do?
NAEP, of course, the National Association of Professional or Probation Executives, is just as the title implies. It is a group of executives that specialize in probation or serve in that capacity. Right now, we have about 150 members, which include about 24 different organizations. And we represent, or there's representation from about 6 countries.
Okay. And so that would be all across North America, or do you include South America too?
North America.
Okay. And you share issues relating to management and leadership?
We do. We share information relating to management and leadership. We share information regarding trends in the populations we're responsible for supervising. We share new and emerging research that is being done. And we also share in making sure that we have a streamlined message of what the business of probation supervision should be about.
Okay. Is there a lot of variety in the way that probation is delivered across the states?
I think there's a quite a bit of variety. You have some that are state level. You have, of course, some that are federal level. You have some that are county level. But I really believe at the end of the day, the roles and responsibilities are about providing services to the individuals under our supervision and trying to achieve positive outcomes for them. It may be set up structurally different, and there may be different nuances, but at the end of the day, I believe everyone would agree that it's about making individuals, giving them the opportunity to get on the right path and become law-abiding, productive citizens.
I get it. Okay. Now, 2020 has been a year like no other. Shall we start by looking at what changes COVID-19 has caused for you at NAEP level? Because you've not been able to get together. So what impact has that had on NAEP?
Well, I think from a NAEP perspective, one thing that we've got to realize is this is new to everyone. So in essence, it brought things to a halt. In regards to NAEP and its normal functioning, what has happened is it has also at the same time brought respective leaders together to share ideas, focus on some of the same challenges that we're having, and more importantly, some of the same solutions or various solutions in dealing with it. So it's refocused a little bit in the present, in the here and now. That's what NAEP is focused on now, but also looking forward, knowing that there will be an end to this pandemic and staying the course of what we were originally charged to do.
Okay. What have you had to change then? What's had to drop off the agenda for NAEP?
Well, this is interesting. I think one of the things that has changed from NAEP's perspective is we really don't meet in person anymore. Just as most individuals are doing, most meetings are of course virtual. That certainly has some benefits and also perhaps some downfalls. Of course, we try to convene at conferences where you have individuals involved in the same profession. Of course, that is stopped. So we've had to readjust. Then you look at things like membership. You've got to find different ways to reach out from a membership perspective and do things a little different that way. So that has changed. And I think it's somewhat streamlined the focus specifically on the pandemic, at least for now.
Okay. How have you shared the present, what's happening now, the new practices? How have you shared that?
I think primarily over email. Has been it, phone calls. You're going to have an organization and a network of professionals. And within that organization, you always have folks that will have a stronger relationship with others. Maybe they're similarly situated in their agency size or mission. And I think that is one of the things that it's created a closer relationship amongst the members, more individual now than broad-based.
I get it. What have been the biggest challenges for you as a national leader?
Learning how to navigate in this environment, seeing what individuals respond to, understanding the dynamics. When you talk about letting folks know what the value of NAEP is to them, but also with that in the pandemic, several agencies throughout the nation have undergone budget cuts. So they stop memberships of professional organizations. So finding a way to navigate around that and still communicate a unified message of what this profession is about.
With budgets being squeezed, you've had to find a way of saying, look, stay in NAEP because we can give you guidelines, we can give you support mechanisms. There's still value in being a member of NAEP.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
I'm wondering whether being a local leader helps you with that. Have you found that having the two jobs has been important?
I think it helps. Georgia has, if not is one of the largest community supervision agencies, just by the number of individuals under supervision. I think that helps. You operate and lead from more of a macro level, and that gives you a little bit different perspective. But what I also find is the challenges, especially around the pandemic, the challenges are the same for all of us in this profession. We're all struggling to find the best way to carry out our mission. So I look at it as just maybe broadening my scope, if you will. But I definitely think they are parallel, without a doubt.
Okay. With Georgia, and you've got thousands of offenders that one way or another you have community responsibilities for, have your staff had to find new ways of providing supervision and accountability for their work?
Sure. Of course, at the initial stage of the pandemic, we ceased all field interactions, and that changed the way we do business. We've had to go to mainly virtual interactions, and we've had to have a heavy reliance on technology. I will say we were way ahead in that, so it wasn't too big of a change. In fact, that's what led us as an agency to be able to carry out our mission in spite of the pandemic. But I think the utilization of technology, dealing with individuals that we supervise that may not have access to the technology or the knowledge to utilize the technology if they did have access to it. So it's created those challenges. I think that's one thing. I think working, certainly flexible schedules, working from home instead of going to a place to work. But again, fortunately in Georgia, we were already accustomed to doing that. But that is certainly a challenge that is within the pandemic. That's what we're finding.
What about offenders that perhaps were didn't have iPhones or smartphones, or were uncertain about how to use technology? How did you overcome that difficulty?
Well, interestingly enough, we approached it from not as a component of supervision, but we approached it as a way to introduce and help them refine a new skill set. Technology is so integrated in what we do day in and day out. So it's not as if they would need this technology for supervision. They need it now in a very technology-oriented environment and world. So we approached it that way. And there were cases that we would have to spend a little bit more time on working a smartphone or a computer. But we have not had any cases where we were unable to address it or to find workarounds. That's the good thing. But that's a lens we look through. Is this is something for them? This is another tool in their toolbox.
Okay. Have your staff brought particular emotional or mental health problems to you? Let's start maybe not from a client or an offender perspective.
Sure. I think your well-being of staff as a leader should always be on your mind, and always checking to make sure that your staff are doing well. And I know from a personal level, I think about how the pandemic has affected me. We're all in a sense of change. There's heightened anxieties. There's heightened worry. So if I have those, certainly our teammates and our staff are going to be dealing with those as well. So I think the first thing is to be cognizant of it. But there's an added layer. Now they're having to worry about their family, their own personal safety. They're having to worry about making decisions. Should my child stay home for school or should my child go to school? So there's an added layer of worry that they take on. And I think as a leader, we've got to be cognizant of that. We've got to stay tuned in to the individuals we're responsible for, and more importantly, be able to provide the resources that they may need through these challenging times.
Yeah, the same is true of the offenders or the clients themselves, isn't it? That they are having exactly the same set of doubts and worries.
Yes.
Are you encouraging your staff to discuss those with the offenders?
Absolutely. You know, our staff are reminded at least on a weekly basis of the what we think are simple things, but wear a mask, wash your hands, watch your distance. We need to convey those that we supervise to the same things. I think we've got a responsibility to help to inform them, to educate them, to make sure they have an understanding, but also to ask them how they're doing during this pandemic and how they're adjusting and how they're coping. So I think that's the one thing is this pandemic is applicable to everyone. And just because they're under our supervision, that certainly does not mean they're immune from the same feelings we have.
Do you think it's affecting the working relationship between probation or parole staff and their clients?
Interestingly enough, I think it's affecting it, but I think it's affecting it in a positive way because you're having more conversation. We're all going through this together. And I think that's what makes this totally unique is the challenges our officers are having in their personal life with the pandemic is the same challenge that these offenders under our supervision are having. So there's a bit of commonality there. And then when we talk about the video interactions, interestingly enough, we're spending more time with our offender. When we were looking at field contacts, on average, it was about 6 minutes because there are so many distractions around. Well, field interactions, we're finding out we're spending about 23 minutes. So there's more engagement. There's more dialogue. And then we surveyed the actual individuals under our supervision. And they revealed the same thing through the survey, that they actually felt a better connection with their officer. They felt that the officer was more in tune to their issues and concerns and what they were going through, not just with the pandemic, but overall.
So they're getting more time face-to-face through their iPhone or through their computer than they were if they were doing a visit at the office or at the home.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's created more time for the officer to do that. Before, let's say it was not uncommon, certainly in rural parts of the state, where somebody would drive 45 minutes to make a contact with an individual. Well, driving back, that's an hour and a half to make that 1 6-minute interaction. And now in that hour and a half span, you can have interaction, quality interaction, with easily 4, 5, 6 individuals under supervision. So it's created more time for the officer to be more effective.
Yeah, and presumably better for the environment as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. If we come back to the challenges that your organization has faced, do you feel that the organization will just go back to the way it was before, or do you think that new ideas will change the way that your organization operates?
That's a very good question, John. I think I had an individual on our team put it like this. This is not the new normal. This is a new opportunity. And there are things associated with a pandemic that actually we call silver linings. For the example that I just gave you with video interactions, that's extremely positive. We have found a new way. Why would we want to go back? Even from a central office and an administrative perspective, we have found more efficient, effective ways to utilize technology, being forced to utilize technology. So when you're still accomplishing the same thing from home, for instance, and maybe even more efficient or effective, why would we be paying so much lease or rent space for brick and mortar? So there are opportunities, because then perhaps, what if you reduce that and reinvest it in programming for the individuals under supervision? So there are a lot of opportunities here, and I think that's going to be, for our profession, a game changer. And that is one of the things that NAEP is focusing on. What have we learned lesson-wise, and what do we need to sustain as a result?
Are there any innovative probation practices that have emerged through COVID-19 that you could share with us?
I think we're all familiar with telemedicine and telehealth. I think telecounseling, operating groups virtually and not having to be gathered, but these individuals are still getting their services that they needed by way of counseling, whether it be substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, cognitive restructuring. That is something that has emerged that I'm not so sure we really gave any attention or thought to doing. That has really, really been extremely beneficial for us.
So is that using group techniques through Zoom meetings, that sort of thing?
Exactly. Zoom, Google Hangout, whatever the platform is. Absolutely.
And doing cognitive behavioral change programs one-to-one just with the computer, or different things to that?
Sure. And I would not suggest to you that this will replace the personal aspect of it, but we do know it is another option and another viable option for us. So that is something that we have found out during this.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the role of NAEP in sort of looking at the national sphere. Are people sharing probation practice developments through NAEP as well?
Yes. Through NAEP, through our membership and network, sharing ideas through our publication that will focus on that, through our website, and also using NAEP as another reference point for other, perhaps, associations or organizations that are sharing information.
Okay. It's intriguing, particularly sitting in Europe, to think that NAEP has a link with other parts of America. So your Canadian colleagues, are they handling COVID in a different way, because I don't think they have as intense experience of the pandemic as you're having in America.
Right. And I'll tell you, John, I would be less than honest if I told you that there has been enriching dialogue with other countries. I think right now our focus has been on the states, but I think there is an opportunity to learn from those other countries. But I think also it presents a challenge because other countries are perhaps dealing with the pandemic in a far different way, whether it's lockdowns, shutdowns, mandates. So I think that's why we just have gravitated to what our country here in the States are going through.
Right. To a certain extent, America is a continent in itself, isn't it? So the different states sharing is important.
Exactly, and even more so now during the pandemic, without a doubt.
Do you think NAEP will go back to the way it was before?
I don't think so. I think because what the pandemic has created is an environment to share information, an environment to learn new best practices, and perhaps learn practices that we need to steer away from. I think this is a golden opportunity for us to share with. This is the only organization where probation executives exclusively are members and share ideas specifically related to our field. And that's what makes us unique.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got to hold on to the USP, haven't you?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to reflect a little bit more about the impact of COVID on you as an individual. Mm-hmm. Has anything made you rethink your approach to work, Michael?
It has. It actually, I try to look at the positives in everything. I think it has grounded me a bit more. I think it has shown me the value of perhaps time instead of things. To be where your feet are, I think it's taught me a little bit more. It's kind of ratcheted back the pace. And a lot of times what I've realized is the pace of things moving so quickly, there was a lot of activity that may not have been yielding outcomes. So it's made me to personally reflect on how am I utilizing my time. It's made me personally reflect on relationships with friends, with family members, with coworkers, to a great degree.
And were you spending a lot of time in airplanes before?
Not a great deal, but certainly in a car, traveling around the state, but usually maybe once a month flying out of the state. But most of my time on the road in Georgia, visiting different offices and individuals throughout the state.
And have you missed the personal contact, though? I mean, we've talked about saving time in a car, but the downside of not visiting those offices is that you might become a more distant or remote figure.
Yes, I have greatly missed that. I like to think of myself as a people person. I like to interact with individuals. I think there's a lot to be gained through body language, through the impression, through facial features. And you know what? I don't think there's anything more valuable than a good hug, a warm hug, or a good handshake in looking someone eye to eye and making that connection. That I dearly miss.
And we may not be getting that back for a long time.
Unfortunately.
And my own experience is some days you feel zoomed out, that you've had too many meetings and you need to get some fresh air and really miss the personal contact. Do you think lockdown's changed you as a person at all?
I think it has made me focus and re-evaluate my priorities. I don't see how we can go through this pandemic and not change. I think it has made me realize the anxieties associated with it. But I've also realized there was a lot of stuff that I would spend my time worrying on that I'm not so sure right now is really all that important. I know you've probably heard, don't sweat the small stuff. And at the end of the day, it's all small stuff. And I think that's what this has revealed is my time was being spent on a lot of small stuff.
Because I wonder how quickly we'll forget these lessons and just restock the small things back into our lives again.
You know, the longer it lasts, the less the likelihood we'll forget it. That's the double-edged sword of this. Yeah. But I hope we utilize it as a good reflection, and I hope that the benefits we gain from it will be sustained.
Have you found time to do reflecting or reading while you've been locked down?
I have. I've actually gone back and I've read a couple of my favorite readings. I've actually been reading a little bit more. Some of the things that I may have not spent a lot of time on, whether it's personal reading or whether it's professional reading, I'm finding that I actually have time to do that now just because of some of the time gains associated with the pandemic.
Have you got a book to recommend?
I do. I'll tell you, I just finished it. And it was actually done in the state of Georgia by Wising Up Listening Project and Sharing the Burden of Repair. And it was talking about reentry after mass incarceration. And what I really love about this book, it talked about all facets of the criminal justice system in regards to incarceration. It talked to probation. It talked to parole. It talked about service delivery individuals. It talked about those individuals that we are supervising. And it is probably one of the most honest, frank discussions. And that's what I look at the book as, a discussion. of the challenges we face with the criminal justice system, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's an excellent read. It really is.
Okay, well, we'll put a reference up on our website, and we'll expect sales to shoot through the roof and hope that it travels to a European as well as an American audience.
Well, I don't gain a thing from it other than the fact that I really enjoyed it, and I thought it painted a very good picture all the
time. Okay, give us the reference again.
This is Sharing the Burden of Repair, Reentry After Mass Incarceration. And it was a project done by a Wising Up Listening Project.
Sounds like we can't afford to miss that. Now, I mean, while you've been doing your reflection, have you had a question or a challenge that you would like to share with other leaders?
I think I am always struggling and reflecting on, am I spending enough time giving the necessary attention to my teammates, to those that were supervising, to myself, and certainly to my family. And this pandemic has made that even more of a challenge, because those things should always be important. And those questions should always be asked by leaders. Are you giving enough of your time and energy? And now, it's not so much about proportion, it's about amount. That's what I find challenging from a leadership perspective.
There's a danger, isn't there, if you talked about the small things and the stuff that gets in a way, that you can spread yourself too thinly.
Easily.
And the other thing that also I think is hard is that if you're used to, say, working in a team and you're either in the same office or you see each other a lot, there's lots of business that you can react just by being around each other.
Right.
And you've got to attend that. Relational exchanges just are, yes. You've got to put time into that in a way that you can't just if you're sharing a building.
Yeah, that's right. It's got to be a focused investment. That's the way I would phrase it.
The quick coffee is not quite so easy if you're 150 miles away, is it?
No, that's exactly right. Not
or if there's an ocean between us like there is today.
That makes it even more difficult.
Okay, so your challenge really is, are you spending enough time with the team, maybe on yourself and also with your family? So
we'll
pass that on.
John,
go on.
One thing I did want to mention, that when you talk about changing the profession, here's one other that I think is a very important observation. Okay. We really started focusing on the utilization of our county jails and locking people up for technical violations. The jails were in a unique position where, it was unsafe during the pandemic, perhaps. And the last thing they needed was us to contribute to it. And what we found is a lot of times we were, my phrase, slow walking technical violations and perhaps giving individuals an extra second or third chance regarding technical violations. And I am interested in seeing how positive that is, because I do believe it's making a difference. It's forcing us to work with them more instead of just using a custodial setting as a quick fix or a punishment tool. So I am interested in seeing how that is fair.
If it's unsafe to be in a prison, let's slow walk more people in the community. That sounds like a challenge. And if we can work with people better in the community, well, let's hold on to them.
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. Right. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time, Michael. So thanks a lot. But have you got any COVID-19 advice for your NAEP membership as we sign off?
I do. Stay positive. Know that this too shall pass. And know that you're not in it alone.
Well, that sounds like a really good way of finishing our time together. Thanks very, very much indeed for spending this time, Michael. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. I hope that they will stay safe and hope also that you can join us another time. I want to say goodbye and thank you very much. These podcasts are available on your normal provider via iTunes or Google and under INCJ Podcasts. Goodbye and thanks again.
You have been listening to the INCJ Podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.